Welcome to 40A&M in 5, a download of 40A&M LLC, recorded at 2100 Eastern on Sunday, April 28th, with a selection of tech sector and related global policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, European data protection reform enters a critical consultative phase. The British newspaper industry offers alternative post-Leveson regulatory plan. ECPA reform bill passes the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the voice of Alexander Graham Bell is heard for the very first time. But first, the U.S. government is about to adjust the way that it measures the economy. And some of the biggest changes will affect the entertainment industry. At present, for instance, the amount of time that a recording artist spends in the studio working on new songs isn't counted. Some economists have likened this productivity to be the same or similar to a factory investing in a new machine. The change will also mean similar attribution of movie production investment, in scripts, in sets, in production and in royalties. In addition, money that companies spend on research and development will also be added to the GDP. Why now, you may ask? Over time, the economy has increasingly shifted from physical goods production to the production of intangibles. In all, the adjustments will add an estimated 3% to the size of the U.S. economy, or approximately $500 billion. However, historical numbers will also be adjusted, so the charts won't show any big jump over time. The Bureau of Economic Analysis in the U.S. plans to implement the changes in July. As we enter May, Brussels' plans to overhaul the European Union data protection laws are in the midst of a complex negotiation phase that will continue into the coming months. The European Parliament wants to toughen European Commission proposals by imposing more stringent rules, a move that many in industry see as potentially impacting data-driven business models. The European Council, representing EU member state governments, is pushing for a much more softer approach, hopefully one that will ease the regulatory burden for business at a time of continuing economic difficulty in Europe. In the midst of these conflicting points of view, the Commission's proposals may ultimately form the middle ground. Speaking at the International Association of Privacy Professionals 2013 Data Protection Intensive in London last week, a gathering of privacy professionals from around the globe, European Data Protection Supervisor Peter Hustings offered his own predictions for what the much-anticipated EU privacy regulation may finally look like once adopted. Despite the continuing skirmishes, Mr. Hustings remains confident that the much-anticipated EU privacy regulation would meet deadline and be in place by the spring of 2014. His impression is that there is a basic consensus on the current architecture of the regulation and that it is the right one. Now the focus, he says, is on getting it right, and the key word will be balance. Always at the forefront of these discussions on adjustment to privacy laws in Europe is the fear that any changes, particularly prescriptive changes, may stifle innovation. Mr. Hustings was emphatic in his response that nobody wants to stifle innovation, but innovation needs effective data protection in order to increase trust. The next test for the Commission's proposed regulation will be an expected vote in European Parliament Committee near the close of May. The British newspaper industry has reportedly rejected plans for a press regulation that had been agreed to by the three main political parties in the wake of the report issued by Lord Leveson. The report, issued in the wake of Lord Leveson's nearly year-long comprehensive inquiry into media regulatory issues, followed the phone hacking scandal that rocked the UK press establishment and shuttered the news of the world. The newspapers have not fully opposed the idea of a media regulator backed by royal charter, but have drawn up an alternative plan. Critically, the alternative plan would not be backed by state-sponsored regulation. In addition to removing the key element of state legislation, the newspapers' plan would remove Parliament's power to block or approve future changes to regulation of the press. Instead, the regulator itself, trade bodies, and a newly created recognition panel would have to agree to any changes in how the media is overseen. Industry is describing this alternative as a workable, practical way to swiftly deliver the Leveson recommendations without any state-sponsored legislation that to their minds would potentially endanger freedom of speech. Initial criticism is that the newspaper's plan could see the press regulating itself once more under a rulebook it has designed, and whether this might be acceptable to the public or the phone hacking victims remains to be seen. Lawyers representing the papers said that they have formally petitioned the Privy Council, which meets in May, to consider the issue and the newspaper's proposal. On April 25th, the Senate Judiciary Committee in the U.S., by bipartisan unanimous voice vote, approved the Leahy-Lee-ECPA Amendments Act, or S-607, to reform the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. The bill would require law enforcement to obtain a warrant in order to gain access to the contents of email and documents, pictures, or other information stored in the cloud. Reform of the ECPA, a law passed in 1986 and considered by many, including a significant number of tech sector companies, to be woefully out of date, nearly made it out of the U.S. Congress this past winter. But at the last moment, a provision written to amend ECPA was deleted prior to a vote on the Video Privacy Protection Act, moments before it was sent to President Obama for signature in the week before Christmas. Under current law, documents that a person stores in the cloud are unprotected by warrant requirement, and law enforcement can access this information without judicial authorization. The same rule under the current ECPA applies to email more than 180 days old, and according to the Department of Justice, all email regardless of its age. The changes provided in the current bill would codify the 2010 Sixth Circuit U.S. v. Warshak opinion, which found the ECPA to be unconstitutional to the extent that it allows law enforcement access to email content without a warrant. A second major change in the bill would require the Government Accountability Office to issue a report on law enforcement's use of the ECPA. But before ECPA reform package could be implemented, it has a long road ahead. First, it must pass a vote on the Senate floor, and the House must consider it or similar legislation. Alexander Graham Bell, the storied inventor largely credited with developing the world's first telephone, among so many other inventions of the late 19th century, is little known to have also conducted experiments in sound recording and reproduction. He did so between 1880 and 1886, collaborating with his cousin, Chichester Bell, and technician Charles Sumner Tainter at Bell's Vogtle Laboratory, located at 1221 Connecticut Avenue Northwest in Washington. Inside the lab, Bell and his associates tested a variety of materials for potentially recording sound, including metal, wax, glass, paper, plaster, foil, and cardboard. Numerous of these tests resulted in the creation of now fragile discs of cardboard coated in wax and foil. However, the precise methods they employed in their efforts to play back these recordings had long been lost to history. The curator, Carlene Stevens, of the National Museum of American History, said that the discs range in size from 4 to 14 inches. Physicist Carl Haber at the Lawrence Berkeley National Labs in Berkeley, California, had succeeded in extracting sound from early recordings made in Paris as early as 1860, and he and his colleague, physicist Earl Cornell, and Peter Alia, a digital conversion specialist at the Library of Congress, began analyzing the Volta discs. The alternative playback system they came up with uses light and a 3D camera to turn the bumps and grooves of some of the wax-covered cardboard discs into sound. And on June 20, 2012, at the Library of Congress, a team including Haber, Stevens, and Alia first heard the inventor say to himself, in witness whereof, "Hear my voice, I am Alexander Graham Bell." Bell's father, Alexander Melville Bell, had been a renowned teacher of elocution, and Graham Bell himself was the devoted husband to his wife Mabel, who was deaf and dependent on lip reading. His attention to diction, which was expected, is evident in the recordings, but the excitement of hearing for the first time the inventor's own voice provided an exciting moment for many in the scientific community last week. The inventor also recites a series of numbers and lines from several Shakespeare plays, and in addition to Alexander Graham Bell, also identified is the voice of Bell's father on a recording from 1881. Several of the reproduced recordings have been made available online by the Library of Congress. You have been listening to 40A&M in 5, a production of 40A&M LLC. For more information, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases. We'll be back on Monday, May 6th. Until then, make this week one to remember, and bye for now.